Good evening, folks. Chef Craig Hartman here with Chew the Fat. We are the podcast where you can find out the inside information about what it takes to be a foodie in the food business, a chef, a winemaker, a farmer, a butcher. You can find out exactly where these people derive their enjoyment for working 1,000 hours a week. You can find out who inspired them. You can find out every minute detail. And it's right here, folks, on Chew the Fat. You can find us again on chewfat.net and on sevillepodcast.com. sevillepodcast.com. And so anyway, tonight on Chew Fat, we're very excited because we have Chef Jeffrey Lazotte from On 20 Restaurant in Hartford, Connecticut. And he was a silver medal winner at the Bocuse d'Or USA competition, which, you know, myself being a longtime chef, and I say longtime, I'm in my 40th year, believe it or not. And Paul Bocuse, who this particular competition derives its name from, was the, when I was a young man, was the chef. He was the chef that really every young chef looked up to. Now, he's still a chef that every chef looks up to, young and old. And a lot of the younger chefs, sometimes they haven't heard of him because, you know, they're so used to watching the Food Network, or they're, you know, they're reading the local magazines or the American magazines. But Paul Bocuse, who, you know, who did his internship at La Pyramide for Fernand Point, really epitomizes the foundational cuisine that all of us follow. And so this particular competition is the most important culinary competition in the entire world. And for me, I got to tell you, I was happy enough to watch Jeff compete last weekend via live streaming from the Bocuse d'Or Foundation's website, and it was to me like a world champion boxing match. I was so excited. Jeff, are you there?
I'm here, Chef. Good evening.
Good evening. I got to tell you, I was losing it, Jeff, and I know you were there and you were competing, but I was you know, I was watching this thing on live streaming. I had it in the kitchen, you know, the laptop in there, and I was, you know, chopping vegetables and whatnot. And you know, I was yelling at you through the television, you know, to hurry up, you know, get plated, you know, all kinds of stuff. I was yelling at your commis not to cut his finger off, you know, the whole thing. And it was, for me, it was actually more exciting than the Super Bowl. I know that Mike Bixaglia is going to be upset about that because, you know, he is a Giants fan. But, you know, I wish we could have, everybody who loves food could have watched this thing. How did it feel? How did it feel to be there? Was it surreal?
It was amazing. You know, it was unlike anything I've ever experienced before. I tried to look at it as another dinner service, a dragged out dinner service, you know, that lasted 5.5 hours instead of the typical 3 or sometimes 4 hour dinner service that a typical restaurant chef experiences. But it was amazing. I mean, it flew by from my perspective. The time went really fast, which I think is pretty normal when you're in that situation.
It's unbelievable. Look, before we get really into the heart of this competition, what can you tell us about the Bocuse d'Or? Go ahead and give us a little background, and I'll interject when I can, too.
Okay. Well, this is my first time competing, my kind of introduction into the Bocuse d'Or.
Sure.
I was introduced first with Bocuse d'Or when basically Timothy Hollinsworth had competed, who is the chef de cuisine at the French Laundry.
Sure.
And that caught my attention just from reading it in the New York Times in the food section. Kind of caught my interest. That was a long time ago. That was in 2007.
Sure.
And then when I was working in France, obviously that was a lot more mainstream. Bocuse d'Or was huge.
Sure.
All the French cooks that I worked with regarded it as the end-all of all culinary competitions, and it is. So that really kind of was a whole nother level. And then coming back and seeing Chef Kent and Chef Alan compete in France last year, and what a tremendous job they did, and
sure,
just the momentum that they had built up got, I think, everyone excited and encouraged me to kind of go for it, give it a shot. So.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I know that the Bocuse d'Or has been around since, I believe, 1987, and it's a competition that a lot of folks in the U.S. have only been hearing about maybe in the last 6 years or so.
Sure.
You know, when I know that when Hartmut Hanke went, you know, they had a whole special on the Food Network about it. I know that there was a documentary on one of the stations about the last one, and they're held every 2 years in Lyon, France, and you know, 24 countries are selected to compete, and each country's team, I know, is comprised of a chef and a commis assistant. This is quite a thing. You know, you were saying you're in France and you're working in a, you know, a very nice restaurant over there, and they're into it. Do they have kind of a, you know, I haven't been there, so take me to France right now, and you're working there, and the Bocuse d'Or is on. Do these guys have favorites, or were they just totally nationalistic?
Yeah, well, I mean, in France, everyone obviously is rooting for the French team.
Oh, what's wrong with them? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. I'm the same exact way.
That's pretty normal. There's a lot of patriotism. You know, it's the Olympics. The Olympics for cooking. So, you know, you're so excited to see your country represent, and you're behind them as much as you possibly can. And just for me being in France when it took place in 2007, it was amazing to see. It was like you know, Super Bowl for
sure.
Us. I mean, everyone was glued to their TVs watching it, anticipating the results, and you know, it was unreal to really comprehend how important that is, not only just in France but in Europe.
Sure,
you know,
yeah. Well, I think what's really cool is, you know, this particular competition, and I watched the documentaries, two of them. So, you know, I got to see a lot of the competing in France. So, you know, you got your commis. Is there a specific type of person that you have to find to be your assistant?
Right. The only rules is that your commis can't be older than 22 years old.
Wow.
During the time of the competition. So, and that's, you know, for us, the competition really takes place in Lyon 2013. So, the commis, my commis couldn't be any older than 22 in February 2013.
Wow.
Basically, they have to be 21 at this point. They just, you know, have to have a birthday before that time.
That's crazy.
So yeah, I mean, you're looking at guys and girls who are fresh out of culinary school or still in school. They're young. They're super green.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's really cool to work with people
right
that age, because they're just full of ambition and energy and all these great things.
Yeah. Now, but they have to really make a commitment. I mean, if you go to someone and you say, okay, I'd like you to be my commis, or, you know, we're competing to, you know, hopefully get to Lyon, this person has to have a vision to go through 2013 when you first are recruiting them. Wow, that is that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think that's one of, possibly one of our disadvantages as Americans compared to some of these European teams is that we don't have the same sort of apprentice system that they have in place in Europe.
Sure.
So, you know, saying that you're looking at candidates for Comis who are, you know, just finishing school, they're concerned about either finishing school or getting their first job. It's tough for them to comprehend the commitment involved here and the potential ramifications of what could happen if you know you're selected to go and compete in the young. You know, it's everything else is put on hold, and you eat, breathe, and sleep Bocuse competition. You know,
that's crazy. I think that's amazing because, you know, someone who's coming out of culinary, lots of times they're like, well, you know, I want to go work here, I want to go work there, I want to travel or whatever. But, you know, to make that kind of a commitment to a chef and say, okay, I'm here for you, buddy, and I'm behind you for this many, you know, for 2 years or whatever, that's huge. Getting back to the competition, I think, you know, for folks who are listening, each team is provided 5.5 hours to create two elaborate platter presentations, and one of them's seafood, one of them's meat, and accompanied by three original garnishes. And they're presented before 24 judges, each of whom is among the most esteemed judge chefs in the entire country. And then you have to do a plating for these judges for them to taste. And I think the judging has to do not only with the presentation of your platter, but how you worked during the day, the techniques that you use, the efficiency you work along with the Comis, as well as the way your dish tastes. I mean, that's pretty huge. How did you how did you first of all decide that you wanted to do this, and then what was your process to actually get picked to be a finalist?
Yeah. So my ambition for Bocuse was there. It was waiting for someone like me, and there's so many other young, incredibly talented chefs who are so capable of competing and doing something like this, who maybe just might not have the time or the resources.
Sure.
And I think I was in a position in my life and my career that kind of presented itself to allow me to go after it. So I, you know, went through the application process, and in the back of my mind, I was always thinking, well, you know, I'll go for it, but I don't think I'm going to make it too far. And, you know, and as things went, and I advanced to certain next levels, it became more and more kind of realistic that I might end up competing in January in the finals. And the way they did their selection process and the way they did the application process, as far as I know, is a little different than what they've done in the past.
Sure.
In the past, the national finals has been up to 12 chefs competing, and this year in January there was only 4 of us.
Mm-hmm.
So a little different kind of methodology and, you know, thinking behind the selection process this year.
Sure.
And so, you know, that was my ambition. I, you know, like any good chef, I think we're always trying to challenge ourselves and find the next opportunity, the next challenge. And, you know, every day for me at the restaurant working is a competition. You know, every service is a competition, and we're always trying to compete with ourselves and get better. So it seemed only natural that I was going to try to do an official competition. This being my first one, sure, I was a little bit hesitant about going for the big competition off the bat, but I felt confident that, you know, it was about cooking, and it's something that I've, for the last 15 years, have been doing and feel pretty confident about my ability. So
sure.
So, yeah.
Well, I think, you know, being an American, and I think I talked to you about this before, you know, I spent some time traveling in Europe, and I find that European, you know, the Michelin star restaurants are they're incredible. They're incredible. But the restaurants also that are family restaurants that are very affordable are very, very tasty and very good. No service, but they don't care. You know, it's a family restaurant. But the regular fine dining restaurants you might find around, there's not near as many that are at the level as we have in a lot of the towns in America. And I know that there's people who say that I'm crazy, but I've been able to eat out quite a bit, you know, in my life. And, you know, we have some incredible chefs in America. And, you know, for me to be able to watch you and Chef Rosendale and Bradley and, you know, compete at that, I was very proud. And I know that, you know, Chef Rosendale, who won, you know, he was, you know, he's very good. And he's gonna do a nice job. He's gonna make us proud.
Absolutely.
And you know, for me, I was just in awe, and I hope that you know, folks that listen will go to bocusedorusa.org, which is bocusedorusa.org, and be able to check out the pictures, the gallery of the food that was served, the level of food. But what gets me, Jeff, is not just that the level of the food was there. It's the kind of intense competition that you were under during that period of time. It wasn't a relaxed thing at all. I mean, this was totally intense. You had to break your proteins down. You had to do everything there. You had a Comey. Tell us about how that felt going into that competition the morning of Sunday, the 30th. Was that the 30th?
It was the 29th.
The 29th of January. You go to the Culinary Institute of America. You walk in there, and who do you see in there? You see Daniel Boulud, Thomas Keller, Grant Achatz, Gavin Kaysen. I mean, the list goes on and on. How does that feel?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously it was intimidating. I'm not used to that environment. And regardless of how well prepared you are and how many times you've done your run and how well trained you think you are, nothing's going to prepare yourself for that sort of circumstance when you have all eyes are on you. And it was weird, man. It felt like I was in some sort of like incubator of a kitchen, and you know, everyone was just like gathering around it and hovering around me and staring at me and, you know, taking notes and analyzing. And we had chefs who were, you know, proctors who were noting every detail throughout the 5.5 hours as to how I worked and how my Comey worked and how we worked together and how clean and, you know, all those things that, that end up, you know, going towards your overall performance. It was, you know, for less of better words, pretty weird, but pretty cool at the same time. And, I got over it pretty quick. I mean, as soon as, you know, the ball got rolling and we started cooking, I just kept my head down and worked, and it wasn't a concern about what was going on outside. Sure, all that mattered was what was going on in my little kitchen. I was kitchen two, and we had good energy in there. I felt really nice about our setup. The kitchens were beautiful. The equipment that they had provided and the way they had set it up, so it'd basically be the same setup that you would have in Lyon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
It was cool. And the day before, there was a Comey competition. And the Comey who competed, this girl, Rose Weiss, who worked at Gramercy Tavern, she won it. And she's a really cool, talented young lady. And I just felt super fortunate to walk into the same kitchen. And that was my space. So we had a good energy going in there. And You know, the whole environment, the way they try to simulate what it'd be like in Lyon and all the noise and
yeah.
the energy.
Well, speaking of the noise,
crowds, the music and it was cool. But you know what it's like when you're in the zone. I didn't hear all that. I wasn't listening. I wasn't paying attention. All that mattered was my food.
Don't say that now. You need to say, well, you know, when I was in there, I heard my family, you know, cheering, and it uplifted me.
I did hear them. I tried not to pay attention to it, but yeah. Did hear the crowd.
I think what a lot of people may not know is that at this particular competition, they set it up so there's a stands for fans, and they bring flags, T-shirts with the chef's picture, horns, cowbells, you know, they yell, and and then you have this like techno music playing in the background. It's intense, you know. I mean, I would imagine you'd have to zone it out, but I got to tell you, I was the live streaming, and of course, you know, one of our fine young coworkers from back in the day, Diane Nguyen, was there. And she was giving me the blow-by-blow via text messaging. So we were texting back and forth. And I'm like, you know, how does Team One's food look? How are they doing? Are they on time? You know, how's Jeff doing? Does he look nervous? You know, no, he looks focused, you know. So we're going back and forth. And it was big fun, I got to tell you. But, you know, having all of that, I'd imagine you would have to be focused. Give me kind of a quick rundown. So you go in there and you get your food. Were you able to set up your station the night before, or, you know, put any food in there?
Yeah, absolutely. They hooked up the foundation and basically comes down to Chef Kaysen. He was running the show, and he had set up the weekend, basically set us all up for success. He wanted all the chefs to be able to produce the food that they had been working so hard to put out. So we were definitely hooked the whole weekend. We arrived on Friday and met with all the other competitors, met with our team captains. We were all a captain who was kind of like our liaison for the weekend, who was a tremendous, mine was a tremendous help, AJ Shaler, who is the culinary liaison for Danielle Belude at Dynex. Obviously just have to give her a big shout out because she was huge the whole weekend, as well as so many other people and even the other captains, Chef Kent and Chef Allen. Such a great support network, and the way they had set it up was just that, you know, whatever you needed to get prepared to go in on Sunday, you were basically provided with it. We had some time on Saturday to kind of measure and peel and kind of just mise en place a lot of our stuff and get ready for basically the move into our kitchen, which happened on Saturday night.
Right.
We brought down all the ingredients, all our food, all our produce, all the products, and then had an opportunity about 3 hours to set up our kitchen, get all the equipment in the way we want it, design it, move anything around, switch around the electrical if we needed to. I had to do a little bit of electrical work since I was doing some sous vide cooking, and I had several circulators I needed to set up. So, you know, we had all of us had some decent time to make our little kitchen into our own little space, make it home. You know, I brought my own rugs from the restaurant so I could feel kind of comfortable and give it more of a familiar feel. And,
sure.
You know, it was great because when we were ready to go on Sunday, we were truly ready.
Wow. That's awesome. So you get in there, you have to do a seafood, and you have to do a meat. Were there, did they tell you ahead of time, okay, this year you're going to be doing, cod and chicken. Was it chicken?
Yep, cod and chicken.
Yeah.
And we found out the ingredients in late October when they had made the final selection for the four chefs who were going to compete.
Right.
And we were given a technical file with, you know, all the rules and regulations and how they were going to run the competition and how it was going to be judged, all the ramifications that you know, that we needed to process to get ready. So I started developing my menu immediately after that for the cod and for the chicken, and that was one of the hardest parts of the whole competition, was coming up with my menu and, you know, picking and choosing and trial and error and several tastings and lots of disasters and lots of triumphs, you know, finally saying, okay, this is what I'm going to cook in front of the world.
Yeah,
competition, you know?
Even the fact that you have this panel, not only the board of directors, which I think is Jerome Bocuse, right? Paul Bocuse's son, and Keller and Balud and Kaysen.
Yeah.
And maybe Tim Ryan, I believe he's on that, but I'm not sure on the board of directors. But then you have this panel, you know, with Grant Achatz and Tracy Desjardins, and you know, I saw a bunch of folks on there that I recognized. And this is a group of people that I don't know if I walked in front of and I was going to serve food to, I would probably have quite a headache by the end of this thing, because I would be so intense that, it would be brutal.
Yeah. No, they had an incredible panel of judges, and there was two sets of judges. There was a judge, there were six judges that focused just on the fish.
Right.
So at the end of our five, the competition, the duration of the competition was 5 hours and 35 minutes.
Yeah.
So at hour five, you had to have your fish plates up. And they changed the way they've usually done the competition, is that you do a fish platter and then you do a meat platter. This year, there was no fish platter. It was fish plates.
Right. Right.
So your presentation was just the fish plates. And so at hour five, that was the first thing you had to have ready, was your fish plates,
right.
Eight fish plates. Six for the judges, one for the head table, which was, as you said, Chef Bocuse and Keller and Chef Kaysen, and then one for the press, and then the other six were for the chefs. And then for the chicken, at 5 hours and 35 minutes, you had to have your platter set and ready to go, which was taken from your kitchen and paraded around in front of the judges, in front of the stadium, in front of the guests, in front of the media, and then put down outside of your kitchen in a designated area where you brought everything you needed to plate it, basically, plate straight from the platter, your eight chicken plates that, again, we're going to go six for the judges, one for the head table, and one for the press.
Wow.
So, and that was really different, trying to plate from a platter to a plate and then have the judges evaluate you based on food that's been sitting on a platter for the last half hour. So what I did was I wanted to make sure that my chicken was hot for the judges.
Sure.
So the platter was created, and I used chicken. I had two pieces, two different parts of chicken. I had chicken breast Ballantine, and I had a chicken leg and thigh presse. And I designated some just for my platter, and then I had some for the plate up. So
right.
I made sure that when the judges tasted the chicken, that at least the chicken would be hot.
Right.
The garnishes would be obviously room temperature. I didn't have the ability to flash them in an oven.
Sure.
They had to go straight from the platter to the plate. So.
Wow. Wow. And so you, when you got there, you spent your first, you know, the first, you know, a couple hours just rolling off of your list, huh? Would that basically be it? Did you have to create all your sauces from scratch right there? Did you have some stocks and things that you could draw from, or did you have to roll right with everything?
No, they have certain things you're allowed. You can bring stock. You can't bring any finished sauces. You can't bring any demi-glace or any kind of jus. The only thing you can really bring is stock that's prepared. So obviously with the chicken, I had brought some chicken stock to make a chicken jus with all the carcasses.
Right.
Some of the things you could have, like I was saying on Saturday, we had the option of the ability to peel and measure and, it was, everything was kind of set and ready to go straight to battle.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to start from ground zero. You started at maybe, a little bit above that, but, everything was basically done within that, allotted time.
Wow. So what did you find to be kind of the most challenging thing about this competition while it was on? What was the thing that you found most challenging? And then tell me, was there any moment in there where you really had to suck it up and just say, okay, I gotta get a move on, or I gotta fold, or did you have any of that happen?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think if anyone had seen or watched the competition would have known that there was a little drama going on in my kitchen, because 40 minutes into the competition, my Comey severely cut his index finger while he was slicing Jerusalem artichokes. So that was a major kind of bump in the road for us.
Sure.
And there was the possibility that he was going to have to leave to go to the emergency room, and the cut that he had suffered was severe enough for stitches, and they wanted to take him, get him stitched up. But Michael Kevin, I got to give a hands down to him. The man, this young man, is truly an incredible guy. He hung tough and didn't want anything to do with leaving the kitchen. Basically,
awesome.
Told my coach, who Chef Noel Jones, my executive chef at the restaurant at 20, who was our coach. Thanks to him, he came back and basically taped his whole finger up with. We use painter's tape a lot in the kitchen to post up stuff, and so he just took a whole roll of painter's tape and just bound his whole index finger up in it. And,
look, I saw it on the stream, and that was a huge bandage.
I know. I mean, it was. It was enormous, and it wasn't.
You needed me there for that, because I am the expert on fixing a finger that's almost all the way cut off to go to the end of service, but still be able to use it. But that hurts, man. He had to be in some pain.
Well, you know what it is. I mean, that adrenaline is pumping, and whether it's a small cut or a big cut, you're gonna bleed, and it's just gonna come out. And so there was a little drama going on, but. I got to hand it to him and to my coach that they really just kind of they hung tough. They got it done, and he was back in it. So literally within 15 minutes, he was back in it.
That's crazy.
Going harder, and that was, I think, looking back, it was almost the best thing that happened to us was that accident, because not only did it show. The discipline that he had, and that I had tried to instill in him, and the way we tried to represent and to carry on and to just continue to cook regardless of what's going on, and that's basically what happens when you're at work. When
absolutely.
I'm at work at the restaurant, we don't close the dining room doors when someone gets hurt in the kitchen and can't cook anymore. You don't send the guests home. You make it happen.
Yeah, right.
You just keep going. You figure it out and you improvise. And you sometimes these things present themselves with whole nother opportunities and even better things. So I really look at it as a blessed chef, to be honest with you. I don't look at it as a advantage.
Sure.
I mean, sure, it kind of screwed up our timing and sent us into a little panic mode. And, the thought did cross my mind that, all right, if he leaves, then what am I going to do, throw in the towel here? Because there's no way that I'm going to be able to cook the food by myself. So
Right.
So, yeah, that was intense. But, you know, we got back on track, and, you know, you budget for that stuff. In our timeline, we had always budgeted for, you know, something like that to happen.
Yeah,
at that
right.
time, we had enough time. We had plenty of things to do. We had a lot of food to cook. A lot of things to prepare, but at the same time, we had budgeted for accidents or,
sure.
or for curveballs.
Yeah. So tell us about your fish dish. What? Give us a little rundown on that dish.
Sure. So fish was cod, and the cod was provided by a company that sources the cod off the coast of Cape Cod.
Nice.
Basically, the first thing I thought of when I thought of cod was cream and bacon and potato and garlic, all these wonderful flavors that, you know, you associate with chowder. And
sure.
Because cod is such a bland kind of, you know, it's either you fry it or you confit it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know... Cod was difficult to be versatile with, and so I without hesitation went for chowder. And for one, because chowder is something I enjoy, that I love, that I'm connected to, being a New Englander. So it just made sense.
Sure.
So breaking down the chowder, it was, you know, what do you have in a New England chowder? Well, you have potato always, and you have salt pork,
mm-hmm.
some sort of salt pork, and bacon, you know, is usually what you find. So starting with that foundation, I built up my concept in the plate, and I really wanted to make sure two things. I wanted to make sure that the fish was cooked perfectly, because that's the most important thing. The fish is like Chef Repair, who I used to work for, would say all the time, it's the star of the plate. So
right.
if I'm doing a cod plate, then the focus has to be the cod. And I want to make sure that whatever I do, the garnishes have to be impeccable. They have to flow. They have to be, it has to tell a story. It has to, all these things. But it comes down to that fish better be cooked perfectly.
Mm.
Otherwise, all the other background noise is useless. You know,
right.
all the garnishes, all the hard work, everything, in my opinion, is futile if you fail to cook that fish perfectly.
True.
So that being said, I knew I was going to cook my fish sous vide. That was the easiest, most surefire way to make sure that that fish temperature was perfect and cooked properly. And then obviously it comes down to presentation. How am I going to present it? And so... taking the chowder theme and kind of pulling it apart one by one. I basically did a cod that was cooked sous vide that had a mousse
right.
on top of it, which was made from the scraps of the cod.
Mm-hmm.
And the mousse had espelette in it, piment d'espelette,
right.
which I have an affinity towards from my time in France, living close to
mm-hmm.
the Basque region. Felt it, A, it looked really nice because it provided this kind of pink rosy color, but also added a little smoky, hot sweetness to the fish, elevated the seasoning of the fish really nice.
Right.
So that's how I prepared the cod, and then the rest of the dish was following the chowder theme. We did a main diver scallops because they're beautiful right now and in season, wrapped in smoked bacon that was smoked from a local smokehouse here in Connecticut with manila clams and some Ocetra American caviar. And then we did a potato vol-au-vent with roasted persillade lard.
Mm-hmm.
The potato vol-au-vent was really cool. I mean, the potato was kind of like a gratin style, sliced really thin.
Right.
Almost like potato boulangerie, and then it was cooked sous vide, taken out, and then we basically cut cylinders out of them and pan fried them in duck fat.
Mm-hmm.
So they looked beautiful, and they were delicious. And then I did a leek, a component. I did what we called the leek and cheek, and it was kind of a spin-off, you know, Thomas Keller's tongue in cheek. What we did is I wanted to use, you know, the whole cod. You know, everyone I think at the competition was focused on using the beautiful flaky loin, you know, fillet flesh, but I used the belly for the mousse, and I also used the tongue.
Right.
Which is incredible. If you've ever had
cod, I've never had a cod tongue in my life.
Oh,
Jeff,
it's really cool. It's like fish jelly.
You know, I saw you breaking down the cod on, yeah. and when you started taking the tongue out, you know, the guys, everyone, like, you know, who was talking was like, he's taking the tongue out. What the F is he doing? So, yeah, you kind of threw everybody like, what's he doing? What's he doing with the tongue, you know? And I had these young guys working for me, of course. You know, we're a barbecue restaurant at my spot. So these guys have not been in a kitchen of your caliber yet. So they're like, what the hell is he doing, you know, with that tongue, you know?
No, I thought that was my favorite part of the dish, Chef. It really was, because it's such a good, just a great morsel of fish. And also we did cheek. You know, you gotta love cod mm-hmm. cheeks. You know, for me, if I was gonna, I basically looked at it as I'm cooking for chefs.
Right.
And if I was a chef, this is the sort of stuff that I would remember, that I would be impressed with. You know, I would want to eat the cod cheeks before I ate anything else of the cod.
Right,
so
true.
Obviously, I did something with the cheeks, and I did something with the tongue, and I used a little bit of the throat meat. So, you know, that was a really cool part of the plate, and I think it all tied together really
sure.
well, and I think it was presented really nice. And
I think your fish plate was the best thing there. You know, I was really proud of it as I was watching. In fact, I think it was almost like my team scored a touchdown. So, you know, I was watching it, and I said, that's the plate. That's it. You know, I think I pulled my shirt up over my head and dove on the floor and slid across the kitchen or something.
I
was very excited. It was great. Maybe I didn't go that far, but I was very tickled. I thought that was a fantastic presentation, and I know it tasted good. You know, I was watching the judges, you know, taste your fish, you know, and I was like, look at him, look at their face. Look, he shook his head. He's like, yeah, you know, I mean, I think I was talking the whole time. I think I drove my folks crazy in the kitchen, you know. And in fact, when they were tasting other people's food, I said, look, they look to the left. That means they don't like it, you know. I was like, so I was probably a little prejudiced towards
yeah.
you, but.
Yeah, you know, I think the coolest thing one of the coolest things I did was I served the sauce table side too.
Right.
I served it with a champagne chatter, a sabayon, which I had put in an ISI container, and it was beautiful, nice and stable, and held its, you know, volume really well. And so I piped that out into a beautiful copper pan that was a hand-me-down from my mom. And, you know, I had polished it up nice, and that was going to be my presentation. And I had a Paul Bocuse spoon as well that I used.
No kidding.
To do the table side
yeah.
So that
well,
was,
I got to tell you, it looked phenomenal. Now, what about your meat presentation? Run through that plate or that platter.
Right. So the chicken was my theme. Starting off with the theme was I did chicken with mirepoix. And I did mirepoix because you often roast chicken with mirepoix.
Sure.
And it just kind of goes hand in hand. And I love the idea of its simplicity and the fact that it was something that everyone could relate to, because the more and more I read up and studied and trained for Bocuse, the more I realized that, you know, if whoever does go on to Lyon and competes, you're going to have to be for chefs who represent countries from all parts of the world who their cuisines are all different, but the one thing that brings them all together is the sort of food that Bocuse and the godfathers of Nouvelle French cuisine
sure.
established. And so mirepoix, I thought, was just a perfect fit. Everyone knows what mirepoix is. Everyone understands it. Everyone loves it. So that was my theme, picking with mirepoix. I did, chicken breast and chicken leg and thigh. To me, is two completely different things, so I had to separate them. And so I did two different techniques on the chicken. I did a ballantine with the breast. Typically you wouldn't use a breast for ballantine, you use leg and thigh meat, but this being 2012, chefs have broken boundaries, and I figured that it would be appropriate enough for me to use the breast. So I did the breast, skinless, pounded it out, and stuffed it with foie gras that was wrapped with black Périgord truffles.
Mm.
Made a ballantine out of that, and then rolled it up, cooked it sous vide. After it came out, I rolled it in, I brushed it with some purple mustard, and then rolled it in all the skin that I had taken off the breast. I crisped that up and chopped it up fine with some herbs and some more truffles, and then rolled it in that. So it was kind of and some herbs as well. So it was kind of like an herbed breading.
I'm hungry.
Breading. The leg and thigh, I deboned the whole thing,
right.
Left it intact, and then all the trim, I made a mousse out of that, and I took red onion, being one component of mirepoix. For
sure.
All the listeners who don't know what mirepoix is the holy trinity. It's celery, carrots, and onion. You throw leeks in there, or it's different, but that's
sure.
The basis of mirepoix: celery, onion, and carrots. And so onion was represented inside of my leg and thigh with a red onion marmalade that had really nice acidity, good color. That was stuffed inside the leg and thigh. Basically made like a sandwich out of that, and compressed that, cooked that sous vide, and seared it, and got the skin nice and crispy. And that was really delicious. I was really pleased with the way that came out. And then the other two garnishes were obviously carrot. I did a roasted carrot royale with pistachios and a brick dough tuile.
Sure.
And then my celery component, I did a little something different. Instead of using celery, I used celery root.
Right.
And I took celery root, and then I took mushrooms. I took black trumpet mushrooms, and I made a mi-feuille out of the two components.
Yeah, now when I saw that on TV, I thought it looked to me like a terrine of potato and black truffle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was celery root and black trumpets.
Black trumpets, yeah. Yeah, it looked really, what I really liked about that was just the contrast, the creamy white, snowy whiteness of the celery root, and then the pitch dark blackness of the black trumpet.
Yeah,
I thought looked
great.
Really nice, and it obviously tasted great too. So that was my platter, and then I served it with a sauce Périgordine, which
is
French sauce.
My favorite
stock, but I made a chicken jus with it, and truffles and Madeira and all that good stuff. Oh. So it was.
Did you mount it with foie gras?
I did not mount the sauce with foie gras. Uh-huh. No, I didn't.
I'm just hungry right now. You know that's. Well, I tell you what, I was proud that you were there, but I was proud of American cuisine. Period. When you look at when I looked at the panel again, you get Grant, you get Tracy Desjardins, you got Bill Bradley, Mendez, George Mendez. The list goes on and on, and that's just in the judges. And then, of course, you got Daniel Ballude and Thomas Keller and Gavin Kaysen and Tim Ryan and all these guys. And, and the way that it was run, the way that it was put together, the people that came out to cheer, the families, everything, the way that everybody handled themselves, I was just proud. I was proud to be part of this whole American cuisine. And I think it shows well for the future of what we present. Now, historically, I don't think we've done all that well at the Bocuse d'Or. I do believe that Hartmut Hanke, you know, who was an incredible chef who'd been to the Culinary Olympics many times, had many gold medals in the world. I think he had the best fish platter, maybe three Bocuse d'Ors, four Bocuse d'Ors ago. I really can't tell you. But, you know, I think that, you know, we'll grow in this because you don't have a lot of restaurants in America and places. You have a lot of hotel chefs like Richard Rosendale that are doing, you know, Culinary Olympics and things. But it needs to be bridged between the restaurant chefs and the people who, you know, are doing the American Culinary Federation competitions. And I think that's why it's so cool to see these chefs involved. It's amazing. And to watch you in it was amazing. I'm thankful that I had a chance to watch it and actually have someone to cheer for like yourself. But I felt good for America that particular day. At the end of it, how'd you feel?
I felt relieved. I felt really happy. I felt normally like you would feel after taking an exam, or it was a tremendous sense of lift. But at the same time, I knew it wasn't over. I knew that, you know, just because my food went out doesn't mean that I'm still not being watched.
Sure.
For me, it was the whole weekend was a competition, just showing up there and presenting myself, representing the restaurant and myself, and down to cleaning the kitchen. You know, for me, that was very important, the way we handled ourselves after our food went out and the way we tidied up our kitchen, the way we dealt with students, the volunteers there, and staff from the CIA. For me, that was all part of the package. And so the competition really didn't end until Monday, when I got on my car and left to go back to Hartford after all that was said and done.
Right.
I did feel great, though. I felt really good. I was proud of my Comey. I was happy with the food we had prepared. And I think I could have done some things better, obviously, and it was a big learning experience. But, you know, I was happy.
Yeah, good. Well, you should be. Now, did you go back to work right away?
I did. Yeah. You know, I didn't. So that's but that's normal. I couldn't just do nothing or take a day off.
Yeah,
I needed to go back to the restaurant, and it felt great to get back and be with my kitchen team, and they were psyched to have me back. And
well, yeah, it was nice to see your chef there, and you know, coaching you during that time, and Diane said that, you know, he was there, you know, so, you know, it was all part of it. Once again, you know, it's BocuseD'OrUSA.org, and they have a Facebook page. I think every listener should like that on Facebook. Follow now Chef Rosendale as he heads to the 2013 Bocuse d'Or, because I'm sure it'll get hopefully some live coverage, and it'll be on TV, and you'll get to see, you know, we watch Top Chef, we watch Hell's Kitchen, we watch, you know, Kitchen Impossible, we watch, you know, Diners, Dives, and Drives, we watch all of these things, but which are all fun, and they're great shows, but the Bocuse d'Or is really, along with the Culinary Olympics that happen every 4 years, this is the pinnacle, it's for real. It's not a reality show. This is for real, and I think it's great. So everybody, check that website out. Check out the On 20 website. Can you give us that website real quick?
Sure. It's www.ontwenty.com, on20.com.
on20.com. Yeah. And everybody check that out, too. There's some beautiful food pictures on that particular site, too. You can see what Jeff and his chef, Noel, are doing up there. It's fantastic. And thank you so much again for being on. And I'm proud of you. And I know I'm looking forward to watching what you're going to do for the rest of your life. So now, you know, you're under a lot of pressure now. You realize that.
Well, you know, I am part of getting the silver is you're asked to represent the USA in a competition that takes place in Paris in September called the Trophy Passion.
The Trophy Passion.
Yeah. So willingly and very humbly, I accept the invitation to represent, and I am just starting to get the ball rolling and getting ready to train to another competition in Paris.
Well, I think that's fantastic. Trophy Passion, is it? Can we find that on the internet also?
Yeah, you have to go to Le Culinaire Française. It's
Le Culinaire Française.
The French organization, worldwide French organization that promotes French cuisine.
Wow!
And they're the main. It's their competition, and it takes place at a culinary school in Paris in September. And there's about 12 to 13 countries that compete.
That's awesome. So, and just in case, you know, you need someone there, you know, to carry your bags or something, I'm available. To go over there and, you know, clean your dishes. Do they have that, like, chief dishwasher guy?
I think in French it's called le chef plongeur.
Le chef plongeur. I love it. All right, man. Jeff, thank you very much. And, folks, you've been listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman. And you heard it here tonight all about Chef Jeff Lazat and his journey to the finals of the Bocuse d'Or USA, which is the competition in the United States to pick the person who goes to the Bocuse d'Or competition in Lyon, France in 2013. The winner was Chef Richard Rosendale from the Greenbrier Hotel, silver medalist Jeff Lazat. Thank you very much, and have a beautiful evening.
I know I have. This song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.